Hello, Freedom Fighters. Thank you for listening. This audio interview is brought to you by Open World Magazine, the ultimate guide for pursuing a life of adventure and passion and setting up a location-independent business that can support your dream lifestyle. Go check us out at openworldmag.com. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Open World Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Austin Allred. He is the co-author of Secret Sauce, the ultimate guide to growth hacking and marketing guide. Austin has moved millions of visitors and dollars through multiple channels from Pinterest to SEO. And together with his co-author, Vincent, they've raised nearly $50,000 from 600 backers on Kickstarter. Have had great success. And what makes them really unique is that through this guide, they offer practical, actionable advice and strategies. They show people how to do things, and they actually share software that you can use to automate a lot of the process. So if you're struggling to get traffic, revenue, if you're not making enough sales at the moment with your business, then you're really going to love this interview. I'm excited to have Austin here and to have the opportunity to pick his brain and to learn something new. So Austin, just want to say thank you. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So perhaps you could introduce yourself. Tell me a little bit about your backstory. When was the moment when you decided that you wanted to become a growth hacker? When did you realize this was for you?
Yeah, I don't know if there was ever a single time when I said, this is what I want to do. But from a pretty young age, I got into SEO when SEO wasn't really a thing. So that was back in the days of AltaVista and Lycos, and just it was really easy to manipulate search engines back then, and I thought that was cool. And yeah, from there it kind of kept going. It went into lead gen, started a company. It was VC backed and ended up failing, and now yeah, just I've been trying to get customers and users and revenue for about 10 years now. So
Who are some of the clients? What are some of the case studies that you've worked with? And what have you kind of learned? What did you do to help them?
Yeah, I've done a little bit of everything. Everything from real estate to a necktie company to I worked for an agency for a little while, and that was, of course, whoever walks in the door. Probably most of my money when I was a lot younger came from eBay, I figured out a loophole kind of in eBay's search algorithm. So that search algorithm only searched the titles for stuff at the time. So if, for example, you would search for iPod, it would say, hey, there are 18 million results. You need to narrow your search. But when you were listing a product, if you listed a product just as iPod, it wouldn't stop you, and it would say, okay, that's a good title. So pretty much I spent my younger years just – I had a 5-page long search that said iPod and then minused out all the other stuff and would find those products that were just listed as iPod, and I was the only person to ever find those. And I would just buy and sell them. I could usually buy them for about $50 and sell them for $300-$400. So as a 16-year-old, that was pretty good money.
How many iPods did you end up selling?
I have no idea. It was 50 to 100 probably. Well, so a lot.
That goes a long way when you're out having ice cream with your friends.
Yeah, exactly. When you're not even paying for your own gas money yet, it goes a long ways to do a couple of those a week.
Did you buy your own car, or did your parents chip in there?
I stole my brother's, so he got old and graduated, and they're like, oh, well, he's gone from the house now. We have a car lying around, and I just used that. It was a junker, but you're 16 and you don't care.
Did you share your income reports with your family, or was it just like you kept this money under the mattress or something?
No, I mean, so back in the day, I couldn't register officially I couldn't use PayPal and stuff because I wasn't 18. But I figured out that I could sign up as my mom. And then I could change all of my information, everything from my address to my social. And they hadn't built in the check for that yet. So I kind of just was able to, even though I didn't really have a bank account, I just used PayPal and eventually got a PayPal debit card and just worked off of that. I think in retrospect, that was probably pretty illegal, but that's all right.
I meant that as a joke because I thought if your parents knew the money you were making, they might be able to like, well, maybe you can help out with the rent around here, Austin, or, you know. very cool.
Yeah, that's one of those things that's best to just keep to yourself.
I love it. So you've done some really cool stuff. I mean, you mentioned neckties, and I read a blog post on your site where, you helped them sell neckties. You helped your friend sell $4,000 worth of neckties in one day using Instagram. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that. Like, how do you find these opportunities, and how are you able to be so successful doing this stuff?
So the basic thing, I'll take you through my entire process of when I think about a company and when I think about how it can grow and how you can get users and revenue and customers for it. So I like to kind of start by identifying the perfect user. And it's best if I can think of it in terms of somebody that I know or a name or a face that I can relate to and just really try to dive into that world. So for Instagram, that was my brother and his friend were kind of fashion snobs and started importing cloth from Japan to make neckties, and they wanted to sell them for like $80 a piece. And I didn't know that was even a possibility. I didn't realize people bought ties for $80 for me. You could pick one up for 10, 15 bucks. I don't know why you'd spend $80, but people are into that. We really thought through, okay, what are those people like who buy an $80 necktie, and what do they do and where do they spend their time? And we kind of zeroed in on Instagram. There's a pretty big hipster movement on Instagram, and that's where we figured we could find a lot of them. So we set up an account with a promo code and kind of teased that we were going to launch and just started making contact with as many people as we can. So the first step is identify a customer, and then the second step is find where those customers are. And then the third step is get on that platform wherever those customers are and figure out how to reach out and touch them in any way. So on Instagram, that was us liking photos and commenting on photos. And I think we just sat there for a few days, and Instagram back in the day capped you out at like 15,000 likes a day. So we would literally like 15,000 photos in one day. We would comment thousands of times in one day.
Do you use automated software or something like that?
We didn't in the beginning. Eventually I automate everything. But I really like to, at least in the initial stages, even if it's mind-numbingly boring, to do it by hand. First of all, because that it's difficult. I see a lot of people who try to turn on the automation engine before they're positive of what their process should be. And so it's kind of like, if you end up automating the wrong thing, you're just going to go really far in the wrong direction.
Yeah. So I want to dig into this a little more because, I know a lot of people can just add followers. They can spam accounts, favorite tweets and like posts. But, going back to the first thing that you said, where you said developing that perfect user, that customer avatar, I think it's so important, but it's also very hard, I think, because, everyone wants to be in this position where they want to create a buying frenzy when as soon as they send their message, they want the other person on the end of it and say, holy shit, I have to give this guy my money now. I need to have this. But it's so hard to create that feeling to get them to like be so eager to snatch up your product, right?
Yeah, I really think that 90% of that is knowing exactly who you're targeting. So a lot of the time when people are like, oh, I'm selling like candles and girls like candles, so I'm going to target teenage girls. You're like, wait, what? Like, no, you, if you're starting a candle company, you first, and first of all, find a way to differentiate your candle company from another candle company, but you want to be dominating some really, really, really small niche. And the smaller that initial subset of people that you're targeting, the better it is. And I feel like most people have a tendency, because you love your product, to think that your prospective customer is more broad than it actually is. And I find that, yeah. So like with this, you know, with this book, you would think that our target would be, hey, it's anybody that, you know, we're teaching people how to get users and revenue and customers. So anybody that has a business or anybody that works in marketing or anybody that has a product to sell. But we really started out by targeting those people who that is their sole role and responsibility. And we created a product for those people. So they're, I mean,
what a lot of our, let me ask.
So marketing or growth or that kind of thing.
Okay, got it.
Whether that's you're the CEO or whether you're a growth hacker at some company or whatever, we built a product for those people, and we built a course for those people. And I mean, you can see it in some of the content that we posted. To, you know, when we released some of the early chapters, they've been viewed over 1 million times, just because it was applicable to that niche, really, really applicable. And
I found one of your blog posts through the growth hacking Reddit subreddit.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so I mean, obviously, like someone like me, I'm to explain where I'm at. You know, I might be at like a plateau with my web traffic, or I need to get more subscribers and more customers. So that's something that's very interesting to me. That means I'm going to really absorb your content. So how are we able to drive millions of really interested people to your blog?
That's the thing is, we didn't, if you find that really, really well-defined audience and you create something that they actually love, you don't really have to try that hard. So I posted,
well, that's great news.
Yeah. So I posted it on Reddit, and we, like, I probably spent, I don't know, for, I have like 3 blog posts that are contributing to that million post or million viewer count. And I probably spent about 10 hours on each of them. So it's not like, you know, a lot of people think of, hey, I'm going to write some content, so let's sit down, hammer out 500 words and throw it on the blog. And just so much of that is just garbage. I look around at, did kind of a fintech blog audit because I work in fintech, and so much of it is like 5 financial tips for Valentine's Day. It's like, who would ever click on that? That's literally nobody on the planet is interested to know about financial tips for Valentine's Day. Not one person.
And yet a lot of these, like if you look on Pinterest or something like this, like you'll see posts on there with 3,000 repins. And then all it is just like a small post with like 5 affiliate links in it.
Yeah. They're probably doing, I mean, there's some stuff on Pinterest that works as well, but generally if you find your niche, you target it really well, and you do something that's really, really helpful for those people. So when you read that post, you invited me to come on this podcast, and there are probably a lot of people who are going to be listening to this podcast, and they might, you know, check out the book. And it really, like, you don't have to do anything ridiculous. You just, again, identify your customer, figure out how to get in front of them, and then do... So you figure out which platform you're on, or they would be on, and then figure out what you have to do to get yourself in a smooth way in front of that person.
So what are some other ways that you were able to drive millions of users or millions of, traffic?
So I was working for a real estate company once in Arizona. They're doing commercial real estate, And they were trying to, like, they're working on all this SEO stuff, you know, so making sure that if you Google Glendale corporate office space, they were the first result. And, you know, we eventually had a meeting and kind of sat down and said, okay, wait, like, if you're looking for office space, where, what are you actually going to do? And we learned that what you actually probably do is look at Craigslist first. As great as Google is, that's not really the place to look for stuff like that. So we ended up building kind of a bot that would automatically post all of our stuff to Reddit. And that was kind of gnarly, to Craigslist. And Craigslist has really, really good anti-spam filters. So we had to figure out how to work our way around those. But I think... So they were doing about $250,000 in sales per month for, I think it was like 48 months in a row. That was their goal, and they would hit exactly $250,000. And when we started just posting everything to Craigslist, we sold $11 million in the next month. And it wasn't that much more difficult, and it wasn't that crazy. It was just a better way of doing things.
How often do you need to post on Craigslist? And are you just posting to one specific city? Because I've seen, I know like on Fiverr and stuff, they have people that use these bots that do Craigslist posting. And I'm just curious, how often did you have to post and how many leads were you able to bring to this company?
Yeah, so Craigslist has different filters based on section. So like in the adult section, for example, not that I've ever done anything there, but like they're really, really, really strict because that's where people are the most spammy. And then in the other sections, it loosens up. Commercial real estate is probably right in the middle. So you can post one time for every 48 hours per IP address, per email address. So you had to have a different rotating set of those. But there's not as much volume in those places. So you can, as long as we posted everything that was in our inventory once, that was great. So, I mean, they're usually moving $100,000, $50,000 at a time. We probably posted 45 times a day for that month.
45 times per day.
Maybe over...
You said that you had to use different IP addresses, right? So you had, what, 50 different IP addresses?
We had 75, yeah.
How do you set that up for someone who doesn't understand?
Craigslist is not the system you want to start out trying to beat. it's got to be – Craigslist, for all of its flaws, has the best anti-spam system I've ever seen. So you can rent IPs from various online providers. The difficulty was that you had to have a phone number that matched the IP and then post in that location. So we had to have a set of IPs in Glendale and we had to have a set of IPs in Phoenix. And
so this company has space in all of those different cities, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, they had thousands of
listings. I'm just curious how you guys did it. I mean, I don't have a plan to do this myself with Craigslist, but I think it's quite impressive. That's why I'm asking you.
Yeah, I mean, we wrote a little software that helped us out. So, and every post has to be unique as well, which is hard if you want to put in. So I eventually wrote a thing that would spin the HTML that we would be posting. So it would change the formatting a little bit. So it would change whether you're using an H1 or an H2 or an H3 as the headline. And then anyway, it was kind of a long, convoluted process, and that's not beginner stuff.
How about Reddit software out there that anybody can use? I mean, what are you big on right now and how are you using it effectively?
As far as automation goes, FollowLiker is probably the gold standard.
Tell me about that.
So FollowLiker is a bot for Let's see, they've got Twitter and Tumblr and Pinterest and Instagram. And all it does is it allows you to use accounts, you know, a massive number of accounts with a massive number of IPs that you buy, and you can preset the actions for it to do and randomize everything so you can try not to get caught. There's some people that will, you know, load up 150 Twitter accounts and go to town with all of them. I don't really use anything that way. The only thing I do with those bots anymore is try to take the actions that I would take, but I don't have time because I've got too much other stuff to do.
So you were saying that, you know, these bots, people can set up a lot of different bots that will follow people. They'll do these automated features. What's the benefit, and how can you use this effectively to get people into your funnel or actually like monetize these efforts?
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to be super spammy, as a rule, you can, if you follow 10 people, one person will follow you back. And if you have a really good account, the numbers may be 20, 25% of people follow you back. So really it's just a way, I mean, you think about Twitter as a system. So when I think of a network, I think, okay, how can I define the group that I'm trying to target? So say for this book, I am looking for people who are entrepreneurs or growth hackers. So I can search their profiles. I can search their tweets. I can find people who are tweeting about links. I can find people who are tweeting links to growthhackers.com, for example, or who are tweeting links to, I don't know, popular growth hacking blog posts. Or I can find people that tweet with hashtag growth hacker, or I can find people that follow growth hackers or whatever, right? So if, say that's my group, I can scrape them, get them into a list, and then I can follow them. And if you follow somebody, they'll get some sort of notification that you're there, whether it's, hey, this person followed you, or this person liked your photo, or this person replied to you. That shows up in your notifications. At a bare minimum, they're going to look at your account. If you have a great account or you personalize it well, they might follow you, they might interact with you, they might click on the link in your profile. The smarter you are about it, the more effective it is. On the base level, all you really have to do is follow a bunch of people and like a bunch of stuff, and people will follow you back.
But I have a question, though, because you said on your blog that even the worst accounts can get 7,500 followers per month. I've automated a lot of the following stuff, and it's over 3 months, I only have about 5,500 followers or so.
So
I must be doing something wrong then.
Normally that's a case of not defining your audience as well as you can. Okay. So the best way
Following followers of other people, and that's like what people say to do.
Yeah, I mean, that will work. It doesn't work as well. So I like to...
What's the right way to
I like to follow people who are tweeting about something at the moment that they're tweeting about it.
I meant Instagram. I'm talking about Instagram. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, same thing.
Okay.
Who are posting with a hashtag. First of all, the better a hashtag you find, the more targeted you're going to be. So if you're a fitness Instagram account, there are 800,000 hashtags, and some are good and some are spammy, and you'll have to take a while to look through those. With a necktie company, for example, we found that the hashtag or keyword that worked really well for us was dapper. Because that means something a little bit different than like fashion, and it means something a little bit different than well-dressed or whatever. So because our account was so authentic and so legitimate, and because we were targeting the right people at the right time, so we would generally like and comment on somebody's post within 5 minutes of when they posted. So you can imagine that that looks a lot more natural. That feels a lot more natural. I mean,
so you like and follow anyone that posts a hashtag with Dapper, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and the key is to do it like while they're still. I mean, like you post a photo and you might like take a couple minutes and check your notifications to see who liked it. If you can be at that time, it's really, really successful because then it's hot. It feels authentic. It works really well.
Interesting. I'm using a software called Mass Planner. I don't know if you've heard of it before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've used it for Facebook.
Yeah, it runs on a virtual private server, and I'm not sure if it can do that kind of stuff, but I need to check.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. Sometimes that's just a matter of tweaking the settings. Like, FollowLiker doesn't have a setting to do that, but you can set it to scrape one user and then follow one user and then scrape one user and then follow one user. And if you set the intervals right, it'll do it really well. So that's why I like to do it manually in the beginning.
Okay.
Because you kind of get a cadence down for what should actually be happening. And you see, I mean, if there's a bunch of spammy accounts, you're not just going to, you know, hit up all of those accounts because they're spammy and you don't need to waste your time. And so yeah, it's a matter of really
liking
nailing
and
down.
Following like the most popular accounts, right?
Yeah. And commenting too. Yeah. Okay.
But they're so popular that it's like, I feel like they wouldn't even, what if they don't even notice you?
Yeah. So I usually stray away from accounts. I usually will follow and like people that have, say, less than 5,000 followers. Even ideally less than 1,000. It depends on what your niche is.
Okay.
Because if they have 500,000 followers, you won't even be a blip on the radar, you know?
Yeah, because Instagram sorts by popularity, so the top posts will get like 9,000 likes, something like this.
Let's see. I think you can sort by recency, though. At least the bots can, or at least it used to be able to. Let me see.
I'm looking on my browser on desktops, and the most recent are below the top posts. So when I search Dapper, you know, I can go down and I see most recent and.
Right.
I see a lot of posts here. So I'm liking, I'm commenting, and this is my target market, is what you're saying. So I'm trying to get them to, I'm trying to start a conversation with them and get them to come back to my site.
Yeah, I mean, think of them as real people you really want to make a connection with instead of, you know, numbers you want to hit. If you can interact in a really good way. I saw a bot once that was. It was in like the baby niche or something, and it had like 500,000 followers. And I was like, how are they doing that? And so I went and looked at kind of their history, and they were commenting like, oh, cute, or that's so cute, or adorable, like on everything that had hashtag baby or something like that. So, I mean, that's a little bit spammy for my blood, but that works, you know? If you post a picture of your baby and somebody says, oh, that's so cute.
So there's like one size fits all commenting that can apply to all these hashtags. Every picture of a baby.
It depends. Like if we wanted to automate something like that for the ties, we could say like, hey, looking good. Or like, you have good taste. Or, you know.
Just some kind of random compliment that's really generic.
Right. And then the tricky thing with that is if you do it in the wrong time, it's really obvious. So that's why, I do it manually in the beginning.
Yeah, I get a little, I get really peeved off when I say, oh, that looks great. Come check out our site or come check out at our account, you know?
Yeah, I never even say come check out or like, yeah. I don't know. For me, that's too obviously salesy and I wouldn't click on it. I'd be like, oh, screw you. I don't want to. Like, I'm not, you can't like tell me what to do by commenting on my photos. I'm sure it works at some level, but I okay, try to.
So you mentioned, I mean, I've read you have a lot of interesting stuff on your blog. I think on your Twitter post that you said that if I can't get at least 50 signups per day, then I know I'm doing something wrong. I think you're talking about Twitter, but I think Twitter and Instagram are both kind of two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, Instagram might be a little bit more difficult because you're limited to your link in your bio. But generally, that's about true. Yeah.
So this is just from you take a day and you're basically just interacting with all these people, and then how do you get them into your funnel? How do you set that up?
I like to think about from the point of conversion backwards, right? So what's the carrot that you're enticing people enough that they'll want to sign up for whatever it is? So for the ties, it was just, hey, drop your email here and you'll get 15% off when we launch, preview the ties, and you'll be able to preview the ties early, you know? So it's 50 signups a day comes if you have the right incentives pushing those 50 signups a day.
And so Kickstarter would be like a good incentive, for example, because there's a sense of urgency and mm-hmm. there's a sense of reward and a sense of getting involved in a launch.
Yeah, the great thing, like, Kickstarter is really optimized for conversion. They do a really good job. It's honestly one of the main reasons we launched on Kickstarter instead of just putting the book out on our own.
I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, it just works well, right?
It's much easier to sell something on a Kickstarter or Indiegogo than it is on your own website.
Definitely. Yeah.
So what worked really well for you guys? Because you guys raised 50,000. What was the most effective channel or strategy that you used for Kickstarter?
Yeah, for us, it was mostly building an email list and a little bit of content. So just like generally trying to be helpful in places and then dropping a link to the Kickstarter. So the beauty about having three posts that have been seen a million times is like people, if you really, really help people and you can say, hey, we can help you even more than this. And if you look at my most recent Reddit post in our marketing, it's going to be one of the top posts of all time in our marketing. So the marketing subreddit, for those that aren't super familiar with.
So if I click on the top post, I can find that?
So if you go to the top of all time.
Okay, let me check that out. But one question I wanted to ask you, though, is how are you even getting these guys into your email list? Because I see your blog. I think you're referring to your blog when you say these three posts, austinallred.com. But I don't see any, like, capture page or anything offering, like, something to sign up into your list.
Yeah, I've taken those off now because now my goal is to direct everybody to the Kickstarter. Okay. But, there used to be basically an email drop there that's like, hey, this is, you know, if you appreciated this, this is just the first chapter, and there's going to be, you know, 15 more just like this. I'll let you know when we launch and send you a free chapter if you sign up now, type of thing. And it was obviously worded a lot better than that. That's just off the top of my head.
Quickly did you build up your list before the Kickstarter launch?
It was growing at about 1500 names a day,
that's really good
for a couple weeks. And then we put everybody in a queue too. So we did kind of a waiting list system. So you could like and share and comment and stuff to get moved up in the ranks. So we put 1,000 people in there, and that grew to 3,000 organically. So that worked pretty well, too.
1,500 per day, you said, signups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. So I know people that, like, blog for, like, 2 years, and they don't even get that many.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. A lot of people, I mean, it was at the top of our startups and our entrepreneur, and like my posts are the top posts of all time on Growth Hackers and several subreddits. And like, I just put a lot of thought and effort and tried to be really, really helpful, and it worked.
So if you're not clear what he's referring to when he says our startups, he's referring to Reddit, reddit.com/r/startups. And you mentioned that, so you're getting a bunch of upvotes on these posts, and then you have a link to your blog somewhere in the post.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So okay. Usually I I would put one. So what works the best on Reddit, because if you're just linking to something on Reddit, people feel like you're self-promotional. So I would, now I've started to post the entire post as text on Reddit, and then say, you know, hey, I'll actually, you know, post a link to my email list on Reddit or a link to somewhere on my blog that has the post that's better formatted, because unfortunately you can't format very well on Reddit with a place to drop an email there. And then on growthhackers.com, I think austinallred.com has the most upvotes per post on average. So there's that. And then
which Vince,
growthhackers.com.
Oh, growthhackers.com. Okay.
Yeah. And then Vincent, my co-author, he basically put together a growth hacking talk that won the best presentation at South by Southwest B2B a couple years ago. And since then, everybody wants him to come, you know, give that talk. And he says, and he goes really, really fast through that talk. He's just packing so much information into an hour. Like, if you go to one of his talks, there'll be people who just sit there with their phone the whole time and try to record it or take pictures. And then at the end, he says, hey, if you want the slides or the transcript, just shoot me an email at this email, and you'll see the entire room pull out their phones and email him. So for the Kickstarter, all we had to do was email them back slides and say, also, if you want like a full course or a book that's way better than the slides, here's the link.
So how long did you guys prepare for this Kickstarter?
About a month.
Only a month, wow. Well, some pretty impressive numbers that you're throwing out there. 1,500 signups a day, 50,000 in 1 month of preparation. I think this sounds like awesome to everyone listening to this. It certainly sounds great to me.
I mean, it's what we do.
I mean, what could you do? I mean, think about it. What could you do with your business if you were able to get these kind of numbers? I'm talking to the person listening to this interview, obviously. I mean, for those people who are struggling, you know, just to get a handful of clients, I mean, what could you do with 1,500 signups per day?
Yeah, I mean, the reason I started writing these blog posts is because I reached out and helped one of my friends, and he had a company that wasn't going anywhere, and then, you know, we turned some stuff on, and then he was getting a couple hundred new users a day, which for me was like, yeah, that's okay, but for him, you know, he'd been working for months, and he was averaging like two or three a day, so to 100x that was a big deal. So
yeah,
he sent me.
It's really amazing that, because I've published, you know, almost 200 posts on my blog, and you know, I might get maybe like 5-10 signups. Well, it's better now. I'm getting maybe like 15-20 signups a week or something through my list. Some weeks I get, you know, 20-50, but I published maybe close to 200 blog posts, and I do get a lot of traffic from Reddit, you know, when I post links on there. But you've only posted, just to put this in perspective, you posted 3 blog posts on your blog, only 3.
Yeah, I mean, I believe in kind of the power law as far as content goes. So I have a few other posts that I like threw on my blog and didn't put much time into. And like the top 1% of the posts online are probably driving 80% of the signups. So in my mind, the game isn't so much to pump out as much volume as you can. It's to work as hard as you can to be in that 1%. And I think that's generally a rule in startups and in life. Like, the difference between being, you know, the top 10% of income earners in the United States and the top 1% is just enormous. And then the difference between the top 1% and the top 1% of 1% is, you know, several orders of magnitude. So the internet is like, there's a long tail there for sure, but it's a power distribution. So it declines exponentially.
And I think a lot of people are depending on like SEO, you know, this is all conventional wisdom that they're talking about, where it's like, if you put out more content, you know, your site will grow in PageRank and you'll get more authority, stuff like this. But you're not using, I don't think you're using SEO at all for austinallred.com. You're driving traffic through other channels that are a lot easier for you to be in that 1%, such as Reddit, yeah, you mentioned.
I think generally, unless you're a really big company, thinking about SEO first is a bad strategy. And I say that because in order to get enough traffic, you have to have enough links pointing to your site that you're going to just have to put out an absurd amount of content, like just a crazy, crazy amount of content. Whereas, you know, so those posts that I posted, they each one will get linked to 300, 400 times by various sources. Or, I mean, Google's algorithm depends on how many links are pointing at your site, and it really works. Like, if you have good stuff and people just link to you organically, it's like, oh, well, that was really easy. And not that, I mean, I haven't even looked at the SEO on my blog because I don't, that's not the way I drive traffic. But you start to get SEO accidentally just by virtue of so many people linking to stuff.
Yeah, that's great. So this is kind of like a David's sling that you've developed here, where you mentioned these big companies like Goliath are taking over SEO really. So it's really hard for small people to get noticed, I guess, smaller blogs, smaller companies. Mm-hmm. So we talked about Reddit. We talked about some strategies with Twitter, Instagram. What are some other ones that are working well for you?
Let's see. Pinterest, social networks. Email is the big neglected one that nobody pays near as much attention to as they should. It's pretty crazy that you can just send somebody a message anytime you want for free or for virtually free.
How are you using email in that sense?
Just getting people to sign up for an email list and emailing them. Not really.
Yeah. Okay.
Not anything too terribly crazy. Yeah.
So you're just sending them an offer to your page and that's it.
Yeah. Well, I send a little post and say, and end it with a link, kind of similar to the way I would do most things. Maybe a little bit shorter just because email isn't exactly the right medium for a 15,000 word blog post, but you know, you get the idea. I think generally email is probably the most neglected platform relative to its value.
How big was your list that you built up for your Kickstarter?
It depends on which list. I think all said about 10,000.
10,000. Okay. And then you built that up in about a month, you said.
Mm-hmm.
No paid advertising.
Nope.
Wow. That's good.
I started doing a couple Facebook ads, but I haven't had time to optimize them. So I don't even think we've gotten any sales from that.
10,000 in free traffic. That's amazing.
Yeah, we'll take it.
So if someone wanted to learn more about these strategies, obviously they can check out your blog, austinallred.com. Mm-hmm. What are some other resources that you recommend, both free and paid?
Let's see. There's not much that I would readily recommend. There's just so much garbage. Let's see. Anything by, what's his name? Andrew Chen is pretty good. He has a good blog. I don't know that much else. One thing that you can do is just go to blackhatworld.com, which is where all the spammers hang out, and reverse engineer what they're doing and clean it up.
Because you said on your blog, you say that you have some interesting quotes where you say, good marketers cheat, great marketers win. You said the greatest companies have all grown on the backs of spam.
Mm-hmm. Depending on how you define spam, I think that's true. Almost all of them have found a way to just force their message into the lives of other people. The trick was that they had a message that people wanted to have forced on them. But yeah.
So forcing yourself onto other people, but in a good way, I guess. Okay, Austin. So to rewind back, and if we were to summarize everything or kind of touch on a lot of things that we talked about during this interview, if you were to start from scratch, if you were to work with a new brand, a new product, what would your game plan be? Can you just kind of walk me through what the overall your tactics and what your strategy might be?
Yeah. So first, I would try to identify the really niche customer, the person that doesn't just want what you're selling or providing, but the person that like needs it and loves it and craves it. Then I would go from there and figure out where those people are, where they congregate, and then devise a strategy around that platform and a conversion point around that platform and that type of person. And sometimes that's figuring out how to beat a system or get a lot of traction from the specific platform, and it may just, I don't know, it may be something different, but that's generally how I think of things.
How many platforms do you prefer to target when you start? Is there a limit, or do you just try to be on as many as you can, or what's your
strategy? In the very beginning, I like to focus all of my efforts on one, and you'll be able to figure out pretty quickly, usually in 3 or 4 days, if something's not right, if that's not the right audience, you know when you've hit on something. So if you haven't hit on something, kind of have to go back to the drawing board and try something else.
And is that why you love Reddit so much, like to get feedback really quickly?
Yeah, it's also just a really easy way for, like, I know that there are communities of people around startups and entrepreneurship that gather there, perhaps in a more, how do I say that? In a more concentrated way than you can get to them on any other platform. So on Reddit, I can post one blog post, and if it goes to the top of our startups or on our entrepreneur, then there are thousands of people seeing it who fall in those categories. You can target the same people on other platforms. It just takes more work and they're more spread out.
Excellent. And I love that strategy where you just posted 3 blog posts that were just long form copy, and were able to drive 1 million page views just those blog posts and use that to build this funnel. I think it's so simple and so beautiful in that aspect. You know, everyone, when they start blogging, they think they have to write like 100 blog posts before they get anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the next part is you like to, once you identify that market, you like to manually start to target them. And then as soon as you can, you start to automate. You mentioned when you were doing Craigslist posting, 45 posts per day, which is nuts.
Yeah.
But that's what it takes to really succeed. I think you have to really push it out hard once you identify that market, right?
Yeah, at some level you move to more of an automation. So it's going to be a ton of work in the beginning, which is good because you need your ear close to the ground. You need to be figuring out how people are reacting, what they respond well to. And then once you figure that out and you know exactly what needs to happen, you can automate that, scale it out, and then start to work on other platforms and other channels.
And some of the tools that you've mentioned or that we've discussed in an interview, Follow Liker was one that you touched on, and we talked about Mass Planner.
Mm-hmm.
Any others?
Let's see. I mean, those are definitely – there are all sorts of tools. I think we're going to put out a blog post about all the tools that we use. But most of the time it's Follow Liker, Mass Planner. For Craigslist, there's Clad Genius. It just depends on the network. If you go on Black Hat World or something and search bot for whatever your network is, you'll find there are always a ton of options. Pinterest has Instapinner. Instagram also has Instagress, unless they shut that off recently. But I'd say Follow Liker is kind of the gold standard.
And also you have to make sure that you're being safe and not using a bot that's going to get you blocked or banned from one of these sites too.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I know there's one, Tailwind that's very popular right now for Pinterest, and that does a lot of automated pinning. And so there's a handful of them out there. But again, you just got to be careful not to get banned or blocked or anything like that. But once I guess the last part of the equation, once the missing element for a lot of people, and when you work with clients, is, how would you do it? Like if you need to get them to convert these followers to revenue and to monetize them, would you have them have your client send them to a capture page or a sales page, or what's your strategy there?
Yeah, it really depends on it makes the most sense to me to work from the point of conversion backwards. So what is the desired effect that you need those people to do? And then how can you segue your network into having them do that? So for example, on Instagram, back when we started, not many people were buying things on their phones, especially with the checkout process. It was just really, really difficult. Now it's gotten a lot better and people are a lot more used to it. But back then it was like 3% of e-commerce revenue was on mobile. So we optimized everything there for people dropping their email addresses. I'd say overall, getting people's email address is the most valuable thing you can do, because you can just drop messages into their inbox for free whenever you want. But it really depends on the product and what action you want people to take. For a Kickstarter, once a Kickstarter is live, we don't really optimize for getting emails anymore, because we want you to buy it and we want you to convert. But before the Kickstarter was live, we were driving everybody to sign up for stuff so we could email them when the Kickstarter launched.
And you guys are at the point where you have so much social proof now that you've already raised $50,000 that it's probably a lot easier to get other people excited about the product.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. As I talk to people, they say, oh, well, if your book has sold $50,000 worth and it's about marketing, then it must be a good book. So it's a little bit of self-fulfilling prophecy there. People like, it shows that we know what we're doing, right?
Yeah. When I did a campaign on Indiegogo too, I just emailed my associates and my friends first. I didn't start like promoting it too widely until I already had like 15 or 20 backers behind it already. And by that point I was already about maybe 20-30% of the way there. So that made it a lot easier.
Yeah. I think we launched at 6 AM with a ton of email blasts. And by about noon we had hit $12,000. So that was nice when it was like 29 days left, and our original target was 10,000.
So you hit your target in half a day then, right?
Yeah, I hit it in 4 hours, I think.
Wow, that's fantastic. So I'm looking at this page here. I'm looking at your Kickstarter now. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at your rewards, because one question I had when you were talking about, when you mentioned driving them an email list, I was wondering if, since a lot of people use these social media channels on their phones, whether it might be good to start with a microtransaction, because people are used to that. Their phones are used to like purchasing iTunes, for like 99 cents, stuff like this. So I was wondering if it might be best like start with a tripwire, a low cost, and then gradually move them up to higher price purchases. And I'm looking through your Kickstarter. You've got rewards here for 1,000, 2,000. No one's got the 2,000 one yet. Someone paid $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
But it starts at £1, right?
Yeah. So I think that's kind of just a Kickstarter thing so the £1 that's pretty much for friends and family. So there's not really a reward there, other than like you get your name in the book and we give you access to our Facebook page, but like that's not much, right? You don't get much value out of that. So our strategy was really, we priced it kind of high. If you want an actual reward, the book starts at $50, and then the book and video course is at $87, and it goes up from there. And we had a lot of people ask us why we took that approach, But I think if you're somebody that really wants to learn how to market and you have a company, at the end of the day, $50 isn't a big deal. If it really moves the needle in your company, you'll pay that. Especially if it's knowledge that you gain. And look at how much people pay for a college class. So we priced it high because we knew that we had a limited amount of really, really interested buyers.
If it was a mass market thing and we wanted to sell 10 million books, maybe it would make more sense to price it at 10 bucks. But we made more. So if we would have sold, you know, twice the books or three times the number of books for 20 bucks, we wouldn't have, we still wouldn't have made as much. So that's kind of the interesting thing about Kickstarters is if you know you have, say, 1,000 people who are going to buy, at least for information products, and you can charge a high price because what you're selling is valuable, they'll pay it. So,
yeah, there's an interesting distinction there because people kind of divide into two camps. You know, there's the people that they're not going to pay pretty much no matter what because they're going to say, oh, well, this information is probably available for free anyway. Mm-hmm. So I call that the scarcity camp, you know, where they're so hoarding every precious penny that they have. And then there's the others who they're like, well, if I invest in this, it's going to give me a return. And those are the people that you're targeting. And it tends to be like maybe 20% of your followers, I would say, who fall into that latter camp. And then 80% are the ones that just want free stuff. But then that 20% are the ones who contribute more than 80% of your profit.
Yeah. So it's funny. We have so far 360 people who bought pretty much the $90 version. And that's almost all of our revenue. We have another 120 people who bought the $50 one, but the revenue we get from that just feels so small compared to a higher revenue point and just a couple more backers. I'm sure that we lost some people because we didn't charge $9.99 or whatever for the book, and we charged $50. But I doubt five times as many people would have bought at $9.99.
So I don't remember if it was before the interview or during the interview, but we discussed the merits of Kickstarter and crowdfunding and how it's much easier to monetize these people because you're getting them involved in your campaign in like kind of launching your brand. And there's kind of a psychological factor there where people want to get behind it. They want to support it. Whereas if you were to just send them to a sales page, you know, there's not that emotional connection with them. Would you say that Kickstarter is one of your, like, are you pretty big on this? Like, is this one of your favorite ways of monetizing these once you have them?
Yeah, this is actually my first Kickstarter campaign. So I'd never done anything before, but it's awesome. The way they incentivize early buying, the way they take out the fear of it not making it to market, for us, it certainly helps that we were talking amongst ourselves in the beginning. We were like, man, if this is only going to make a couple thousand dollars, then it's not even worth my time. And I don't even want to do it, you know? So it helps knowing that, hey, I can, you know, given the dollar amounts coming in, I can justify making this a really, really fantastic product. So Kickstarter is just optimized on every level, and it's great. It's really nice that I don't have to worry about, like, there's so many things that can go wrong when you're building the solution out yourself, and so many things that you have to tweak and that you could optimize. So it's always nice when you can take a lot of that guesswork out, and, you know, Kickstarter is running thousands of campaigns a day, and that's what they do. So they're even more incentivized to optimize everything on their end than you are, surprisingly. So they've done a fantastic job.
Any time that you can make 12,000 within 4 hours, you're probably doing something right.
Yeah,
and we're living in a world where a lot of these authors, like people, will self-publish ebooks for $2.99 on Amazon, and maybe sell like 10 copies of a project they worked 6 months on or a year on. So,
yeah, my mom is actually a book or an editor at, or was an editor at a book publishing company, like very legit. You know, you get books printed and put in bookstores, and I made way more money from this than any of her authors. So it's a new ball game, and it's just very different than it used to be.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm planning to do more Kickstarters in the future myself. I think it's a great opportunity.
Yeah.
Cool. So Austin, what's next for you guys now that you have this project almost crowdfunded, and we're going to put a link to that in the show notes. It's only got a few days left, so hurry over there and get it. You can get the early bird special. The rewards start at £35, so it's about $50 or so.
Mm-hmm.
What's next for you guys, and what do you plan to make this into a business? Are there other ways that you're planning to earn money from this venture?
Yeah, we're still figuring that out. The first things first, we need to actually finish this up and get the course out there to the backers who, you know, hey, if you're a backer who's listening, thank you. It's really nice. So first we need to get that out. And then we haven't really figured out what the next steps are. I've got some other income streams, and Vincent is more like this is going to be his thing long term. So whether that's giving talks or building out a product that helps. We're still figuring that out. We'll definitely be releasing this in a more expensive way so that people after the Kickstarter can continue to buy. You'll just save money if you buy it from the Kickstarter. So we'll see.
Tell me how you and Vincent connected. Was this through Reddit or some site like this? Because you're in the Bay Area, he's in the UK.
Yeah, so when he first reached out to me, actually, he was on like welfare and benefits in the UK, was kind of unemployed. And he just, he read one of my blog posts and he emailed me and was like, hey, this is amazing. I'm going to figure out how to do this stuff and make money from it. And I get emails like that all the time, So like, oh, like, good job. Good for you. Go for it. And then, I think I followed him on Twitter, but every now and then he'd send me another email or reply to another tweet. And, then I reached out after a little while and talked to him, and he was driving millions of visitors, and he'd started his own growth hacking agency and was making $10,000 a month. And I was like, holy crap, like this, he was literally, unemployed, and he hustled, and he figured it out. So we stayed in touch, and when I went to London, we met up, and when he comes to San Francisco, we meet up. And after a while I was like, man, I really need to finish this book, but I don't have enough time to, I have a full-time job that pays well, and I have some equity, and it's a really cool company, and I don't have enough time myself to do this right. So who's somebody that I trust who's in growth hacking that would really knock this out of the park? And he was the first person that came to mind. I reached out and we started talking, and I think we're both really glad that happened.
He sounds like someone I need to interview on the podcast, because that's amazing. He was on welfare and collecting food stamps, right?
Yeah.
And he read a few blog posts of yours and then started making $10,000 a month. Do you know what it was that made him so successful? Was it just that he was cold calling people and saying, hey, I can do this for you? Or what helped him to rise so quickly?
I'm not sure how long the gap was between those two things. But on his part, it's just sheer hustle. Mm. Now he like tours the UK and the US, and people pay. So he put together like a 45-minute talk or like presentation on growth hacking. And he put a lot of work into it. He's a really good public speaker, and he just started kind of shopping it around, and he had presented a few different places, and he tested it out for a while until he found something that really worked. And now if you watch him speak, people have their phones out like the whole time, because he goes so fast and there's so much density of information that they'll just sit there and record him and take pictures of all of his slides. And it's pretty crazy. So that ended up winning the best talk at South by Southwest a couple years ago. And now he can tour the US and people will pay $50 to hear him give this talk or give a variation of the talk. So there's a lot of stuff in between now and then, but that's kind of how he built up his network, was public speaking. So that was interesting.
Yeah, very cool. I've seen the pictures on his Kickstarter where he's talking from these crowds and everyone looks really intent on absorbing it. So very cool. So if other people want to follow in their footsteps, if people want to learn more about this and really use this to start making more money and follow, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? Well, if people just want to learn more, where should they go? You have your blog, austinallred.com. Where do you recommend people start? Where can they get the most value?
If you sign up for the Kickstarter, we'll get you on our email list, and then we'll reach out with stuff, and you'll be invited to the secret group on Facebook. So you'd probably get more value out of that than anything. So if you back the Kickstarter project, even if it's just £1 or whatever, that's the best way to keep in touch.
Okay, perfect. And then you'll get an invite to the Growth Hacking Club on Facebook. And if you want the book, that starts at $50. Mm-hmm. And then there's a video course and some other stuff. There's a few days left. If someone wants to get into, if they missed the Kickstarter, what should they do?
We'll have a link on the Kickstarter to buy it. It'll be a little bit more expensive, but you'll still be able to get in on it.
And then you also have free resources on your blog as well.
Yep, that's austinallred.com.
Great. Thank you so much for your time, Austin. I know we had some connection issues, but I'm really glad that we were able to pull this together. I think it's a great interview, a lot of value for people, and I think this could really help a lot of people when they hear this interview.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. Take care. Enjoy your weekend.
Yeah, you too.